Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Now, another part of the world that perhaps we don't hear as much about. There is an ongoing civil war in Yemen and the devastating effect it's having on an already desperately poor country. Apart from the thousands dead, it's now estimated that around 300,000 people there have cholera. We're joined now by Debbie Gallagher from the International Committee of the Red Cross. Debbie, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Now, in broad terms, who's fighting who there?
So it's a very complex situation with the conflict there. It's one main war, which is taking place between the Houthis, who are considered the rebels, who are loyal to the previous president, and then President Hadi, who is recognised by the International Committee as the true president. So with the President Hadi, he has the backing of a Saudi-led coalition made up of United States, UK and France.
Yeah.
And for the Houthis, they have the backing of Iran.
Right. OK. And there are various Al-Qaeda plays a bit part in there, and so does ISIS as well.
Yeah,
so it gets all very complicated.
How
many people are displaced within that country?
It's difficult to know exactly, but it's well up in the millions. I mean, there's a population of 25 million. Because of the conflict, access to areas is very, very difficult, because in some areas you have an area that is controlled by a particular tribe, maybe.
Mm.
And it takes a lot of negotiations to get access to some of these areas. So for some, it's difficult to get numbers actually of IDPs. Internally displaced people.
Yeah.
So, but it's well up in the millions.
Yeah. And, there would be figures, though, on how many people are considered to be food insecure in that they don't have a guaranteed access to food.
Yes. So for the UN, WHO, they were saying that there are 17 million are suffering with food insecurity.
That's a massive proportion.
It's a massive proportion, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Now, cholera, and it's cholera, I suppose, is one of those diseases we think of kind of something from the Victorian era. This is basically about a lack of sanitation.
Yes, basically. So it's multifactorial, really, as to why this outbreak has been so huge and has been so dramatic. It's escalated because of the lack of clean water and sanitation. So the infrastructure of the country is almost on its knees, really. In relation to healthcare, then, it's about 45% of the healthcare facilities that are actually functioning. So you have people that are getting sick from poor water and sanitation, and then they don't have access to the healthcare. You also have people who are suffering from food insecurity, so who are malnourished, and have a very poor choice of what food they have that they can buy.
Mm.
So that's another factor as well. And also you have the fact that in the last 10 months, any public sector worker have not received a salary. So you have nurses, doctors, teachers, and this also goes for even the people that would be cleaning up the streets, taking rubbish away. So for months, you do have a buildup of rubbish in the streets, which, of course, is just a breeding ground for cholera then as well.
Yeah, so anything like a health system that was there is gradually or probably quickly disintegrating, given they haven't the money to pay for it.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
For NGOs operating there, what are the conditions like?
Well, it depends where you are. I am based in Sana'a, in the city, in the capital, so we have our own houses. A few of us live together, but it's security really is the biggest challenge that we have. So we literally just move between our offices and where we live, and then if we go to the field to visit health facilities, and that's it. But there's no socialising, there's no moving around outside. Everything is very, very strict. We only move at certain times of the day and with bodyguards. So. But for living conditions, it's intense, but it's,
you have to do that work. And is Sana'a now controlled by the government at the moment?
No, it's controlled by the rebels, the
Houthis.
Right,
okay.
So basically,
oh, no, the government's in Aden now, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, in Aden, yeah, exactly. So they have that. So it's quite secure in one way because the rebels really have a really tight hold on it. But they will be a lot more conservative than the we'll say, than the opposition side. So for us as...
yeah, because there's a Sunni-Shia aspect to all this as well, of course.
That we may not going to do.
Yeah, we're not going to get into. But does that mean that there would be restrict from for women from Western countries and NGOs, do you have to cover up?
Yes, yeah, we would. So whenever I'm out moving outside, even just in a very short trip in the car, I would ensure I have my headscarf on and the albaya, which is the long cloak, and hair covered at all times. And culturally, it's quite different, of course. And there's a lot of things you wouldn't expect, or you would have to get used to quite quickly.
Especially
not trying to go to shake somebody's hand or anything like that. You wait until they approach you to shake your hand, because some would be a lot more conservative in their beliefs, so they wouldn't shake your hand at all. And of course, then for clothing as well and dress. But
and with so many displaced people, are there a lot of people coming into Sana'a from far away?
Absolutely. So that's another huge burden now on the healthcare system. So for Sana'a, they're the three of the biggest hospitals in the country are based there. So they have, we'll say they will be taking a lot of the iller people from all the different governorates around, because they have more specialised surgeons and doctors. So with the amount of, I think it's about 3 million internally displaced people now in Sana'a. So they have an extra 3 million people that they're trying to give healthcare to. So this is a lot more women giving birth in under fives, looking for free healthcare for and the integrated child. They're all for their vaccinations and everything as well.
So presumably then it says 3 million people. Are they in camps for the most part, or how organized is that?
There are some camps, yeah. So you have some of the UNCHR agencies, the UN agencies. So there are some camps. But as well as that, in Yemen, it's very much, I mean, the family unit is a huge, huge strength that they have. So for a lot of people coming from different, even from the south and north, if they have family in Sana'a, that's who they take in, who takes them in. So they have, I mean, even for our own, our resident staff, I mean, you might have one person having a wage that will be supporting maybe 10 siblings. And then on top of that, their siblings as well, are their children, like sons and daughters. So you have huge families living together on very, very little.
And for the people who are earning a wage, is there much functioning in Sana'a? Can you go, you know, is there a grocery store that you can go down to and buy food?
Yeah, there are. The price of food, of course, has skyrocketed, even you'd notice, especially since Christmas time. But there are some supermarkets. I mean, the saying life must go on, it's very true. And it does. But it's very, very frustrating because, I mean, for a lot of Yemeni people, they would have travelled outside. They would have gone on holidays, foreign holidays and stuff, and studied outside. And now because of the war, they're so restricted. Well, the airport is closed, first of all. So it's only open for NGOs or other workers coming in. But, it's really taken a toll. It's very fatiguing, I think, for the Yemeni people at this stage.
And apart from cholera that we mentioned, are there any other major diseases that has come up as a result of the poor conditions?
Cholera is the main one, but you have a lot of people dying now from treatable diseases because of the lack of healthcare. So even things like high blood pressure, diabetes and that. But there's also a lack of medication for non-communicable diseases like high blood pressure and that. The amount of healthcare coming into the country, the treatment for it has dropped by about 70% of what's needed for the country. So ICRC, we've been able to support with dialysis material for patients needing dialysis, and also for insulin as well. So at least able to bring in a little bit, but it's not a long-term solution. Yeah.
And why is there a shortage of medicines? Is there a difficulty physically getting it into the country?
Exactly, Sean, yeah. It's a difficulty getting it into the country. So the ports have been closed. The ports were closed, and also they were, and the airport is closed as well. So this is something they've been petitioning to try and get the airport and the ports opened again. But
who would make that decision?
Well,
is it the Houthi who make that decision, or is it it's probably blockaded anyway?
The port is actually in the south, which means it's the pro-Hadi side. So it's the...
Right, okay.
Yeah. Their argument is that they don't want to open it, that it will be a conduit for weapons to come in through the country.
And for you, for working for the Red Cross, how long do you work there for and then, you know, have time off?
This is my third visit home for my mission is a year. Mm-hmm. So and it's my third visit home in the year, and I'm about just almost 9 months done. So about every three months I come home.
And in those 9 months, have things got any better for ordinary Yemenis?
No, definitely not. Much, much worse, I'm afraid. There's been a big decline even in the quality of life for Yemeni people in the 9 months.
Yeah. But presumably only peace can bring about, or some sort of peace deal can bring about some sort of improvement to their conditions. Yeah. And so when are you going back?
I'm going back on the 3rd of August.
Right. Okay. Yeah. How do you get there, actually? is it kind of a circuitous route to get there?
Well, I fly to, we actually have a base in Djibouti, which is just in the Horn of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And we have accommodation there because if things become very unstable in Yemen, this is where we would all move to. And then we fly with the Red, which is the ICRC plane, into the airport.
Ah, yeah. Right. OK.
So they just open the airport. It's very eerie, actually. They just open it for us to arrive. And then it closes again once we've gone through.
And you're just the only people there.
We're the only people
yeah,
there.
I can imagine that
with
is.
About 40 cats.
That is. Really?
Yeah.
Okay, that's the oddest detail of everything you've added so far. Debbie, thanks a million for coming in to talk to us today. And we wish you well on your trip back to Yemen. That's Debbie Gallagher there, a health delegate with the International Committee of the Red Cross.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank? Having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas